This time of year, pumpkins are everywhere, piled on haystacks outside the grocery store, carved into scary jack-o'-lanterns on front porches and stoops. But it's easy to forget that pumpkin is really just a type of winter squash, like a food that you can eat, and not just in pie. It's actually pretty tasty, served savory too. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today's food show on KCUR's Central Standard is a two-parter. We're starting with pumpkin, then moving on to pie. I'm here in the studio now with two local chefs, Michael Faust of The Farmhouse and Jonathan Justice of The Justice Drugstore. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
And hi, Jonathan.
Hello, Gina. How are you?
Good. This is so exciting to me. You guys, Jonathan is going to tell us how to make a pumpkin stew, and Michael's got a warm pumpkin dish topped with cheese and cocoa, which sounds amazing. But first, talk to me about working with pumpkin in general. Does it inspire you as an ingredient this time of year?
Yeah, you can actually, I want to say something about Michael. Obviously loves pumpkin so much, he brought his own into the studio today.
Yeah, when I say they're everywhere, there is a pumpkin right in front of me.
Thank you, Johnny. It's a visual for me.
I love pumpkin. I love winter squashes and, especially in what Michael and I specialize in the working with local product. I mean, it's necessary to round out a menu for a good chunk of your winter months. And they're really versatile. And, you know, like you said, people tend to think of, especially with pumpkin, as running to the sweet side. But there is so much that can be done to the savory side. And there are cultures that don't use pumpkin as a sweet in any way.
What are some of the sort of international pumpkin dishes that are common in other parts of the world, but that we might find surprising?
Oh, right off the bat, I think of down in Brazil. It's like a national dish of whole pumpkin that's been stuffed and is baked with this stuffing in it. And it's often vegetarian, but not necessarily always so. But it's, again, it's definitely a savory dish.
Yeah, I've also seen something in Portugal where they use the clay pot and whole pumpkins right into the fire. And they're stuffed with meats and they're stuffed with almost like a stew.
A clay pot and a whole pumpkin right into the fire. I'm actually imagining a smell more than a taste.
The smell is beautiful, that's for sure.
You know, why do you think it is that in our country, like, the pumpkin has been thought of in such a limited way when, as you said, it's a local, I mean, it's everywhere. Why wouldn't it be everywhere on our menus, too? They're looking at each other.
I think this might require a food historian. I don't know. I hadn't really thought about it. But you're right. And it's, you look at after Halloween and then, you know, later even, you know, after Thanksgiving, how many dead pumpkins I see deflated and destroyed and lying around rotting all over the place. And
that's not happening to me because a squirrel already ate mine. Well,
you must have desperate squirrels.
There are crazy squirrels on my block, but that's a topic for another day. The pumpkins being sold for ornamental purposes, they're perfectly good for cooking, right?
Yeah, I've cooked plenty of them. And I think also they don't necessarily have to be small to be good. But I think that they're much better when they've come off of a farm in your own area, because that means, you know, they weren't grown for size and grown for uniformity. The pumpkins you're going to get in a grocery store is not going to be as good as one that you're going to pick up from a local farm.
Yeah, and the variety of actually the pumpkins that are out there, I brought in a pie pumpkin to show the size. Of course, the visual again on radio.
Yeah, bigger than a softball, smaller than a basketball.
Thank you. but when you get into squash, the flavors and textures vary from each and every squash, from your spaghetti to your acorn. But some of the lesser well-known is, you know, your Blue Hubbard.
What is a Blue Hubbard?
A Blue Hubbard is a larger squash, a little bit larger than some of the pumpkins that you'll see out there. But it's a great roasting squash, a great soup squash. Each squash, I think, has its own thing that it does very, very well. It's just trying to figure out which thing that squash does.
So, I mean, thinking of pumpkin as part of the squash family, which it is, Is working with pumpkin labor intensive? I mean, there's a reason why carving a pumpkin is an event for most of us. It's not that easy.
Well, I don't think that it's so labor intensive. One of the things as a chef that I love out of a pumpkin or a squash, is yield.
Say more about that.
Yield for us is what I can make money off of. I hate waste. So in a pumpkin, I can take the skin off. That can go into compost. But the inside, the seeds, the inner membrane kind of thing, you can use that for your purees. You can use that for your stocks. But your seeds you toast off and you can grind or use as a toasted seed. So there's not a whole lot that goes to waste on a pumpkin or a squash.
Using pumpkin for stocks sounds a little surprising to me.
Oh, yeah. Well, in a vegetable stock, you want to try to layer as many flavors as you can in there, and especially for the fall. So you start thinking about the fall flavors, fall textures, and, you know, and again, color.
So, Jonathan, do you also think of the pumpkin as like a waste not, want not ingredient?
I mean, it is. Like Michael said, it's got a perfect yield. I mean, it's funny when just yesterday we were working on a new dish, and I was thinking about how simple the pumpkin is. I mean, one, you know, you said, is it difficult to work with? You can just take a whole pumpkin and throw it in your oven until it starts to deflate and it'll caramelize on the outside, and then take the seeds out, and then...
So wait, and then that makes the cutting fairly simple because it's softened at that point.
Yeah, it's extremely simple. You've got, say instead of mashed potatoes, you've got an instant pumpkin puree. But, you know,
what would you do with an instant pumpkin puree? Pumpkin pie is the obvious one to most listeners, probably.
Oh, well, I mean, I was just thinking about maybe mixing it with a little blue cheese and then having something that'd be appropriate to serve with a piece of beef, you know, I'd say instead of mashed potatoes. Like, you know, you'd want something hearty. I mean, I think it would be maybe a little full throttled for serving with a light flavored, you know, like say a chicken or something like that. But for this time of year, for short ribs or any braised meats or even, any game meat, certainly. You know.
Well, Jonathan, you've been working on a one dish pumpkin stew.
That's right. This is a really, it has some ingredients in it, but one of the things I like about this is that this entire dish can be done in one pot. You want to hear about it?
Yes.
So you take a Dutch oven and you get about 2 pounds of pork shoulder. You want to cut that into cubes, around 1-inch cubes, and then salt and pepper those as you would to taste. And then you want to sear them in your Dutch oven, and then you would pull them out with maybe a tablespoon of oil, maybe if you use olive oil, do not use extra virgin. It's not for high heat. You want to use like just a regular olive oil.
Not olive oil, what kind?
Oh, any neutral oil. Your basic, you know.
Like
any,
a grapeseed?
Vegetable oil, grapeseed oil. We've been using rice bran oil in our kitchen. And then after you've browned off your meat, you pull it out, you take one onion that you've diced, probably a large clove or two smallish cloves of garlic, a teaspoon of minced ginger. The garlic would be minced, the onion would be diced, and then you would saute those and just lightly saute them until they're not caramelized, but when they're translucent. And then you would add to that some gloss. And gloss is
This is not part of my food vocabulary.
This is, and I thought about this, that I would say 10 years ago I wouldn't be talking about this recipe on the air, but gloss is the reduction of, bone broths have been very popular lately. And if you take a bone broth that's got roasted vegetables in it, and then you reduce that down very, very slowly with all of the collagen that is in it, it will eventually get down to something that is a syrupy texture.
When you say reduce, you're talking about heating on the stovetop until some of the water
comes
out of
it. You would skim it, but that is obviously an awful lot for the home cook. You can buy demi-glace or gloss in local stores now, is it appropriate on the air to say names of stores?
Well, if it's in lots of stores, we'll okay. just stick with the recipe.
I would say with your, you know, with your nicer shops that carry more gourmet goods are definitely going to have gloss. So this one has 2 teaspoons of chicken gloss. And then you would have 2 teaspoons, after you've sautéed those vegetables, you would throw your meat back in, you would throw in your 2 teaspoons of chicken gloss, 2 teaspoons of tomato paste, 3/4 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, and 1/4 teaspoon of ground coriander, 1/8 teaspoon of freshly grated nutmeg, and 1/8 teaspoon of ground clove, and 1/4 teaspoon of red pepper flakes.
So the sort of aromatics on this are a combination of like the garlic and things that you would think of in really any soup type thing.
Right.
But then also some of the, I don't know what you might say, like the pumpkin spice.
Yeah, they call pumpkin spice or pie spice, the nutmeg and clove, and the cinnamon, and the ginger for that matter. But then you're, you know, with the garlic, and then you're going to add some red pepper flakes and a couple of tablespoons of cider vinegar and, about 1/3 cup of some applesauce. So you're right. There are some of the pumpkin spice flavors in here.
It's walking that line.
But then you add a 9-ounce can of diced tomato with its juices. And you're going to peel and dice. And I know we talked about how easy it is to use cooked pumpkin, but this is where you're going to have to peel and dice a raw pumpkin. You'll need about one pound of pumpkin.
Can I interrupt you just to say that is the hard? I would say so far listening to you, we're back at what I consider the hard part, which is cutting, dealing with a raw pumpkin. And I don't expect an extensive tutorial on this, but are there any tips? I mean, for myself, I think one of the tough things is getting it not to roll and also getting a good angle on it.
First thing is that if you buy a smaller pumpkin, it is going to be easier to cut.
So smaller pumpkin.
Yeah, so if you get, say, a 2-pound pumpkin, that's going to be enough to get the pound of meat that you're going to need for this recipe. And the first cut I would make would be to cut it in half so you have a flat surface to work on. You can cut it in half and then remove the seeds and the inside and then set the flat surface down and start cutting down the edges from the rounded edge, be the top, down to the flat edge, and that gives you a stable surface to cut on. And because it's not cooked, obviously it's not going to fold on you or roll around on you.
I was encouraged to use a towel by someone.
That's a good idea as well.
Just like stick it in a towel.
Or put it on a towel so it's not sliding around on your cutting board.
Okay, so without getting into too much detail, what wraps up this stew recipe?
So I did want to say, because we talked about other squash, you can do this recipe also with other winter squash, or I love the, sometimes it's called a Japanese pumpkin, the kabocha. It looks kind of like a large acorn squash, but it's got a really delicate flavor. So you'd have 2 teaspoons of fresh sage and 2 cups of chicken stock, and then you would turn it on high to get it hot, and then put this into your oven for 2 to 2.5 hours until your pork has gotten tender. And then I would finish it, because it's going to be pretty rich. You like to finish this with some bitter greens. I like to take some torn mustard greens, a couple of handfuls, and throw them in at the very end before serving.
It's surprising to me, and this is a non-professional's perspective, that something like bitter greens would cut through the richness. I mean, I guess my instinct would be that you'd want something that doesn't have a strong taste itself, but it sounds like the strong taste needs a strong taste to match or something.
And this, you know, there are only 5 things you taste. You know, you can taste salt, sweet, sour, bitter, and umami or savory. And this dish is going to have a lot of umami, and it's going to have a fair amount of sweet. And you want to balance that sweetness with some bitter. The French call the bitter sweet combination agrodoux, and it's well used in cooking around the world, and it's something I think as Americans that we tend to be kind of aversive to bitter, and bitter is a beautiful thing until it's overused.
All right, so this is a pumpkin stew that has pork in it.
Yes.
All right, thank you, Jonathan, and Michael Faust of the Farmhouse. You enjoy a savory pumpkin dish with cheese and cocoa, and even saying that makes me insanely hungry.
Thank you. It's actually funny that you have Jonathan here. He's the first person that had this dish. I served it to him last year.
Oh, wow.
So
he can give us a review.
He can
it was give, awesome. Give you a it was good really review. Good.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that. So it's actually a pretty simple. What you do is you take a pie pumpkin and a peeler, and you peel it. And when we were talking about cutting pumpkins, one of the easiest ways for me, depending on what I'm going to be doing in the end result of that pumpkin, would be to peel it first. That way you can use the neck and work your peeler down, and it gives you a handle to use. But once you get that rind off, that's really the hard part, almost like a delicata or any other squashes. That's the hard part. Once you get to the flesh, it's a little bit softer. So a sharper knife should be able to go right through there. That first cut on that pumpkin or squash is usually the hardest, just getting through the rind. So what we – oh, go ahead.
You know, I just thought of something also. You're talking about how hard it is to cut through a pumpkin.
Yes, my personal obsession.
If you're buying a farm-fresh pumpkin, that skin is not near as tough as a pumpkin that's been traveling around the world and sitting in a grocery store for a very long time, because it gets – that rind's going to get harder and harder.
Ah, good to know.
So true. So we peel the pumpkin, and with that peeler, you just – you just discard the rind, and then with the flesh, you just keep peeling it. So you get these ribbons.
Oh, that sounds beautiful.
Once you get your little pile of ribbons, a little saute pan, hot, medium heat with a little bit of butter, you throw those ribbons in there. You work them for about a minute. You don't want to work them for too long, and you don't want them to break apart. The texture is really a good part of this dish. So once you work that, you hit it with your sorghum, a little bit of vanilla, cinnamon, allspice, and brown sugar. Once that works into almost like a liquid state, I take that about halfway down. So
in temperature?
No, in volume.
Oh, okay.
Take that about halfway down. Once that's halfway down, we go ahead and plate that. When you plate that, you put the cool, fresh farm cheese on there.
Can you give some examples of types of cool, fresh farm cheese you might select?
One of them that actually comes to my mind first is Green Dirt Farms, one of the places we met at. They do a wonderful farm fresh cheese, and I like it because it has just these little sour notes to it. The texture is really beautiful on it, nice salt content on it, and the moisture just seems to work out great for the texture that we're looking for.
Okay, so you've got your cool cheese and your warm pumpkin. Go yep. on.
Once we're done with that pumpkin and we get all those ribbons off of it, we take the seeds out and toast those seeds with a little bit of olive oil, salt, pepper, and a little bit of cocoa powder. And then we can take those and we can grind them up in a Robo-Coo or a food processor and sprinkle that up on top of it.
What do you like about this dish as, you know, just for yourself as someone who eats, not even just as a chef?
To me, I'm not a real big overly sweet guy. I like to finish meals kind of with that cheese plate. So this bridged that gap for me. It really epitomized all the fall flavors with that fresh cheese, that farm funk. For me, a visual, it has all those textures of fall to it too.
You know, I would say about that dish also is that we're talking about compositions. You've got the sweetness of the pumpkin. You've got the lactic acid and the sour of the farm cheese. And then you've got the umami of the pumpkin seeds. But the cocoa powder is not sweetened. So there's your bitter. So you've got a sweet, sour, bitter, and umami composition.
Man, I can't believe I have to still have a rest of this show. And I cannot just go eat a bunch of pumpkin right now. So you guys, before I say goodbye to you, we are about to talk about pie with our food critics. And although we've been emphasizing that you can use pumpkin for things other than pie, what are your feelings about pumpkin pie?
I love it.
I've had a lot of it. I love it. You know, one of those pies that you don't eat year-round, that's for sure. You know, it's a seasonal thing. So when you start seeing those pumpkin pies, you get that fall, that winter. It just comes with emotion.
You know, I would say one thing about I do like pumpkin pie. And I think what makes a great pumpkin pie is you can buy really good pre-made pie shells. I mean, I love homemade pie crust. It's fabulous. But for the home cook, if you don't want to go through that, you can buy a good crust, but go to the effort, skip the pre-seasoned or the pre, you know, the pre-spiced pumpkin that comes in a can and use a fresh pumpkin. It makes all the difference.
Chefs Jonathan Justice and Michael Faust, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gina. Michael, it's good to see you.
Great to see you, Jonathan.
Jonathan was here from the Justice Drugstore. He told us about his one-dish pumpkin stew. And Michael Faust joined us from the farmhouse. He taught us how to make sautéed pumpkin with cocoa and cheese. And now it's time for pie. Call 816-235-2888 to recommend your favorite in or around Kansas City. The dining room at Rye is packed for lunch, but the kitchen's already prepping for dinner. And fried chicken may be their specialty, but they're also famous for homemade pie. Chef Megan Geraltz lays out her ingredients, all cold: water, butter, sugar, salt, and lard.
So at Rye, we use just straight animal lard. I prefer lard. I like the flavor of it as opposed to shortening. In my opinion, it doesn't have any flavor.
Lard isn't so common in pie crusts these days, but it used to be pretty standard. And it's the combination of butter and lard that makes this one distinctive.
I didn't grow up with a family recipe. My mom used to always buy pie crust, but we used to make the fillings together all the time. And I didn't really have one to go back to when we started working on this concept in this restaurant. I do have a cousin on my mom's side of the family that uses 100% lard in her pie dough, and it's really good, but it's very, very pale in color. So I wanted something that had a little bit more caramelization when you bake it off, which butter will give you.
This discovery comes from extensive research.
It was during a snowstorm, so we were kind of sequestered at home. I had a friend over who also enjoys pie, and he and I and Colby, my husband, and our kids just experimented, and we used all different kind of ratios of butter, all lard, to see what we liked. And ultimately, when we did this recipe, we felt that it had enough texture. It was really flaky. The crumb was really nice. You know, it was fun, and we ate a lot of pie for a couple weeks.
Making pie for the restaurant does bring back memories, though.
We had a cherry tree in my front yard, and my mom and I would pick cherries from the tree, and so every summer we'd make cherry pie. Or for Thanksgiving, we'd make pumpkin pie. But it was always like a special occasion dessert because it is a little bit labor intensive. It's one of the labors of baking that I've always enjoyed, though, working with pie crust.
Once she gets the dough together in the food processor, Megan moves quickly.
It's not a dough that requires kneading. You're not making bread.
Instead, she forms a ball of dough, then rolls it right out. All she has to do now is freeze the crust before brushing it with an egg wash. Megan's a professional, but her baking is relaxed, like someone at home.
I cook for nostalgia. The things I make from childhood and from memories and things that I loved as a kid, because I think when people order dessert, they feel very naughty, like they're acting out or they're misbehaving.
And in that spirit, a little lard is a fitting touch. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and now the food critics are here to talk about pie. Call 816-235-2888 with your favorite. Charles Ferruza, Mary Block, Carlton Logan, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I will make no secret about it. I love pie. It is probably my favorite dessert. Pie thoughts?
Well, I'm glad to see pies having a revival, because pies kind of fell out of favor, I want to say, maybe in the 1970s. And they kind of were starting to be dropped from dessert menus, I think because pie was considered kind of plebeian for a while. And
so off of hoity-toity menus.
No, I mean, it was even hard to find a good pie at a place you would think, like a diner. Not all diners, I should say, but some home-style restaurants even. Because as you know, we heard earlier, they are labor-intensive. And so, I think pies definitely, hoity-toity restaurants were dropping them because they're not very fancy.
I do think people at home, because of the labor involved, make more crisps. So you don't have the crust on top to deal with, but it has the same you know, flavor in the end.
I do think I'd agree with Charles that pie crust is labor intensive, so a lot of people tend to do it around the holidays.
As a special thing.
As a special thing, yeah.
Well, okay, so we just visited the kitchen at Rye, and Carlton and Mary, you are both recommending their lemon meringue.
Absolutely, and I would say that's my husband's favorite pie anyway, and they just do a really good job. And the lemons that they use are really tart and puckery, so they've got tons of flavor.
Well, you don't want a sweet lemon pie. I mean, how horrible would that be?
Terrible.
Although I've had plenty of them, actually. Yep.
I am not a meringue lover, so for me to love this pie, it's got to be really good. I don't like that texture meringue, but something about the pie at Rye is really special.
Do you think it is the lard in the crust that we heard about?
Lard is great.
Yeah.
But just generally.
I think it's the ingredients for that lemon meringue. But the other pie that I love there is the Mocan pie. And it's a twist on a basic pecan pie. She uses Missouri pecans and Kansas black walnuts. And it is out of this world.
It is.
And Charles, you like the pies at Rye too?
Oh, very much so. I think that's their lemon meringue pie is really their signature dessert. So it may be the best lemon meringue pie you will find in this city because she has invested so much energy and research in making it the best in the city.
Let's talk to Mike in Kansas City at 816-235-2888. Mike, good morning.
Good morning.
What do you want to share?
My favorite pie probably of all time is blueberry, seconded by key lime. And I think the upper crust has the best blueberry pie I've ever had. So if you guys know a better place, please tell me.
Okay, so Mike is first of all recommending a blueberry pie at upper crust. Is that right, Mike?
Yeah, correct.
What do you like about that blueberry pie in particular? Can you put your finger on it?
I think the crust is perfect. It's slightly sugared, but not overly done. And the filling is not overly sweetened as or spiced as a lot of blueberry is.
So you can really taste the blueberry.
Oh, yeah, they're delicious. I'll tell you what, I brought some home to my grandchildren's house, and my granddaughter, who does not like blueberry pie, tasted it and said, oh, my gosh, this is this is great. She's not a blueberry pie eater except from the upper crust now. So,
well, Mike, thank you for that recommendation. And critics, first of all, we also have some people in the studio recommending the upper crust. So we'll hear from them in a moment. But what about Mike's question about where else to find a great blueberry pie?
You know, another option might be Ashley's Bake Shop. Upper Crust used to have a little shop within Pride's Westport. And now it's called Ashley's Bake Shop. But the pies, I think, are very similar. So he might want to give that a try.
And while we're on the topic of Ashley's Bake Shop, Charles, you're also wanting to say something about them?
Well, I think Ashley's pies are just delicious. And her fruit pies are really, I think, almost extraordinary. I mean, they're very light. And, you know, it's a place where you could buy a whole small pie. So you get all the benefit of getting a lot of pie without having to buy a big old pie.
And he'll love the blueberry in it because it's not too sweet. You can really taste the fruit.
Okay, so now Carlton and Mary, you are both recommending the upper crust for their pies. Mary, you're saying their fruit pies are good, but what else?
Also, their caramel walnut, which is kind of like a pecan pie with caramel oozing out of it. And then their chocolate pecan, which is a pecan pie with chocolate in it.
What do you think makes an exceptional nut-based pie? Like, because I think that people have so much familiarity with that weird, sticky stuff pecan pie.
You mean like molasses?
You know what I mean. Like
there's
like
sugar
and goo, particular form of goo. Yes,
right. The goo. And I think what makes a good pecan pie is the proper ratio of nut to goo.
Okay, so Mary is recommending a caramel walnut and chocolate pecan pie at the upper crust. Carlton, what about you?
Again, with the chocolate, I like the chocolate chess pie. It has this sort of crispy crust on top, and the filling is kind of fudge-like. It kind of reminds me, but is not in the same category as the French silk pie from Tippins.
Well, a chess pie is a southern pie that usually has some liquor in it.
Yes.
Okay. There was a profound yes. Yeah. Yes.
So, but while we are talking about Tippins, Carlton, you are recommending their French silk, and Tippins is like, it's like an institution in Kansas City, and the freestanding Tippins restaurants, they're not there anymore. But talk to me about Tippins pies and how you still enjoy them.
Well, again, the restaurants have closed, but we still have the pies, the quiches, all of the wonderful things we all enjoyed at the restaurants.
Am I correct, Carlton, in the Tippins Pie Company is now owned by Hen House Foods, I think.
I think you may be correct.
Yeah.
Makes sense, because they sell them.
They do sell them, yes.
And and I have very, very fond memories of Tippins, one of the few restaurants that did not fire me in Kansas City. But I thought the pies were great in the heyday.
Well, Carlton, what do you like about their French silk pie in particular? Because they're not the only ones who can get a French silk pie from.
But theirs is very special. It's the flaky crust. It's the creamy chocolate filling, the whipped cream. And you have to get that little chocolate curl on your slice. The little chocolate curl, yes.
Well, it is the most unhealthy for you pie, yeah.
Well,
I think that's probably not the criteria that we're working with today in recommending our favorite
pie.
But
it's the reason I don't buy it anymore. Yeah.
So. All right. Well, let's talk with some of our listeners. We've got Dave in Osawatomie. Dave, what is the pie you are recommending?
I just want to make a shout out to the Paola Livestock Auction. On Fridays, they have a livestock auction. They also serve a lunch there, which is great. But they make some of the best pies you'll ever eat.
You know, Dave, this brings me to the topic of, it seems like pie really is something where if you are willing to, for the city dwellers among our listeners, get out of town and just try something, you can find a great pie. Like, I would say, like, rural areas have a lot of places to get great pie, but people in cities often don't know about those places. And you're telling us that there's a livestock auction with a great pie.
That's right. She makes several different kinds, and these are more old-fashioned type pies, like my mother used to make years ago.
Can you describe what that means? What's an old-fashioned pie like?
Mostly not as sweet, I guess.
Wait, are you talking like hard-to-find pies like gooseberry or boysenberry?
No, I'm not. My favorite that she has there is basically a cherry pie. She makes a mean apple pie, and my wife really likes her coconut cream, and she has several others that I haven't tried, you know, of different things. She might do a gooseberry occasionally, you know, in the summer.
Yeah, that would be a seasonal thing for sure.
Yeah, it'd be a seasonal, but basically you're talking about your basic types of pies, cherry, apple.
And so,
you know, something like...
You say this is every Friday, and where exactly?
Just south of Paola,
okay,
on the old Kansas City Road.
Dave, do you have any other pies near where you live in Osawatomie that you think people in and around Kansas City should know about?
No, I can't think of a pie.
Livestock auction.
Yeah, as far as a pie goes, that would be my recommendation.
Thank you so much, Dave.
Okay.
I want to know where you get awesome pie, and really don't be afraid to take us on a short road trip, because great pie is worth a drive. 816-235-2888.
I've got a place that I bet Mary and Carlton have not been to, but maybe some of our listeners have. TJ's Cafe in Grandview. Have you been there?
No.
It's an old-fashioned diner with homemade pies on the dessert list, and it's... They've got some good pie. Also, a big shout out to the Englewood Cafe in Independence. Have you been there?
I haven't.
They have the best selection of fruit and cream pies in that area. And people like me have to remember to order the pie first.
Well, Charles, before we head off to a break, I want to talk to you about quiche, because pie is not just a sweet thing, and you've recommended a few quiches in town.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, when the weather gets cold like this, I like to have a savory pie, you know, pizza mostly, but, you know, quiche is a good thing, because, you know, real men do eat quiche, unlike that thing in the 80s, but I have had some really fine quiche at Cafe Europa. And, of course, maybe the best original quiche in Kansas City is Andre's on Main Street. And I believe they always have two different kinds.
Probably.
A quiche Lorraine and maybe a different kind. And Aixois also makes a really nice, hearty quiche.
You know who else makes a great one is Room 39.
Yes.
It's about 3 inches tall, and it's just awesome. And I like more of the filling than the crust, so I
Hence
really
a tall
like
quiche.
That. Yeah.
And then, Carlton, you were telling us about a pot pie.
Yes. I had recently at Anna's Oven the chicken pot pie. We all have memories of the horrible bird's eye frozen chicken pot pie.
I forgot about it until you just said that.
Because there's hardly any chicken in it that I remember.
Yes, hardly any chicken. But Anna's Oven makes a chicken pot pie. It's in a double-handled, like a soup bowl. And it has this puff pastry crust on top. And, of course, in that bowl, you've got that wonderful broth with the chicken and the huge chunks of carrots and potatoes. And it's very delicious.
Awesome. And that's Anna's Oven, located where?
On 39th Street.
Mary, you have something on your list that intrigues me, a steak and Guinness pie.
Yes, at Brady's Public House, which is the old Mike's Tavern.
On Troost.
Right. And they redid it. It doesn't look anything like it used to. But Sean Brady, who's the chef, has Irish roots. And he makes a steak and Guinness pie, which is, I actually haven't had it. So I don't know if the Guinness is marinated steak or if it's in the sauce itself. But
you are intrigued.
Yes, absolutely.
Sure,
and it has
delicious.
That puff pastry. I saw it in another table. It has the puff pastry sitting on top.
All right, well, we have to take a short break, but you've still got just a little time to recommend your favorite pie in town at 816-235-2888. Be prepared to describe it in mouthwatering detail. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and I'm here with the food critics, Mary Block, Charles Ferruzza, and Carlton Logan. Hi again, everyone.
Hello.
We are talking about pies, and we are going to hear about some of your favorites now. Shane is calling us from Independence. Hi, Shane.
Hello.
What is the pie you would like to tell us about?
This one is located in a town called Lincoln, Missouri, and it's at Charlie's Buffet.
Tell me more.
So they have all sorts of pies, the traditional apple, cherry, blueberry. They also have a coconut cream pie, lemon meringue. They have all sorts. But what's really great about it is that it's all homemade cooking. It's a buffet style.
Homemade cooking and a buffet style. Gotcha. Well, that's cool. What's your favorite one there?
My favorite is the apple.
Cool. Well, thank you, Shane.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
All right. And he was answering my call for road trip worthy pies in our surroundings. I'm going to take one more call about that from Steve in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Steve.
Good morning.
What are you recommending for a road trip worthy pie?
I'm recommending about an hour away in Topeka, Kansas, in North Topeka on Kansas Avenue. There's a little cafe called Bradley's Cafe. They make brand spanking fresh every morning, about 25 to 30 different pies. They make all the standards. The neat thing about them is they also make a rhubarb. They also make a gooseberry rhubarb and a gooseberry. But my favorite is their sour cream raisin, which is just, I mean, the filling is just creamy and smooth, and the raisins are plump and juicy, and the crust is just flaky and wonderful, and it's just like my mom used to make. It's the only place I've ever found that makes a pie like that.
I was going to say, that sounds like a nostalgic pie.
Very much so. Very much so.
Carlton is nodding his head. He's doing it silently.
Sort of in that mincemeat category.
Let's talk with Melissa, who's recommending some of her favorite pies in Kansas City. Hi, Melissa.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thank you. I would say I would consider myself somewhat of a local pie expert. And so just a couple of suggestions. The Key Lime Pie at Plaza 3 is really a good key lime pie. Upper Crust makes a bumbleberry pie, which is blackberry, raspberry, blueberry, and apple with a crumb topping. And I would have to say it's my favorite. And they have a good cup of coffee to go with it. And then I also really enjoy Lady Bird Diner out in Lawrence.
They have great
They're on Massachusetts Street. And they make a phenomenal chicken pot pie that actually has the bottom crust, and then it has the chicken and vegetables and a top crust, but you don't find the bottom everywhere. And then for a sweet pie, they make a sunflower and honey, like, custard pie.
Ooh.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything else like that at other places, and it's really a good kind of, like, show off your Kansas pride pie.
Melissa, thank you for that extensive pie, like, tour.
I love pie, so I try to find the best ones in town and go there often.
Thank you, Melissa. And, you know, some of our critics are recommending some smaller pies, like the handheld types. What's going on with that trend?
Well, Heirloom Bakery is doing hand pies and homemade Pop-Tarts. We all remember the, you know, the Pop-Tarts that you stuck in your toaster and grabbed them on your
them
way
very
to school.
Fondly, but yeah.
Yeah. And they are making homemade ones with great crust and blueberry filling, whatever you want. And it's nice because you don't need a fork. You can take it to go, and you still have the great ingredients and flavor.
Hand pies and fried pies are sort of gaining a resurgence. And like Mary said, the Pop-Tarts are just, it just brings back memories of your childhood. And the crust is very flaky. I was very pleased with the crust on that
Pop-Tart. Unlike the Pop-Tarts of our childhood.
Yes.
Well, when you mentioned the fried pies, you remember the old Hostess hand pie that you
could
eat?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
They still make them, I think.
Well, I do remember liking them then.
Mary, and you're telling me there's also a little bit of a galette trend.
Yes. So a galette, if you picture it like a pie dough before you've put it on top, you put all the filling in it, and then you fold it in. So you've got the filling is showing probably two-thirds of it. One place I just saw them was at the New Messenger Coffee and Ibis Bakery in the Crossroads, and everything that they turn out is wonderful, so I'm sure it's great. And then if we want to go on another road trip, 1900 Barker in Lawrence has galettes, and I believe they've got ham pies, but I know they have big pies as well.
Let's talk to Carl in Independence. Hi, Carl.
Hello.
What can you share with us?
Well, I don't have a place to recommend it. I have been to the Englewood place, and it's pretty nice. But I had two aunts lived down in Lafayette County, great aunts. They were retired school teachers, and they had a pie that they won prizes with at the Missouri State Fair called Plum Pudding Pie. And it was rich like a pecan pie. It was made with dancing plums and, you know, American walnuts. And they say you can't take it with you, but they did.
Aww.
So when they died, the recipe went with them. And so I was hoping with the Oak Grove Historical Society, they're putting together a cookbook. And I was hoping that the recipe might, you know, providentially be in there, but it wasn't. So
yeah. You're hoping to rediscover that taste that came with that plum pudding pie. Carl, thank you. Carlton, you also are a baker, and I wonder, have you heard of the plum pudding pie?
I have not heard of that one before.
Talk to me about baking pie in memory, because Carl is talking about the filling of a pie that was special and unique. But in my just couple years of experience learning to bake pie, it seems like a lot of the differences between pies and the taste of them and whether we think they're good or bad, a lot of that, it's in the crust.
Absolutely, in the crust. A pie crust is very simple. It's basically flour, fat, water, and a little salt. Where the difference starts is if you're using lard, if you're using butter, if you're using shortening. Lard gives an excellent flaky crust. Butter and lard are different flavors. A lot of people, I like butter, but some people prefer to cook with lard, and it's more traditional, but we kind of had some concerns about lard for a while, but lard is really not as bad as we think it is. It's very similar to olive oil in terms of nutritional value.
Would you say that pie crust is an art or a science? Because there is this very scientific piece of it where you measure things out exactly, follow the instructions precisely, stick it in the refrigerator in the shape indicated. It's not the intuitive stovetop cooking.
No. I think it's both. The science, of course, is exact measurements. The art is, for example, you want to make sure you have a nice size of fat so that it creates that wonderful pocket of air to create the flakiness.
You know, I do think most pastry chefs would say they're scientists. What they do is science, whereas cooks, chefs would say they're more creative and it's an art. But you can't mess around with ingredients when you're making crust.
You know, in the filling versus crust discussion, Mark Bittman has a recipe for what he calls apple pizza. It's just a flat, unshaped crust with sliced apples and a little seasoning on top, but no goo, as we were discussing before. It's very easy. You can justify it as breakfast. You can do it with other fruits too, but it seems like the goo is a part of the fruit pie filling, and I'm intrigued by the goo.
Well, and you've got to have your sugar and everything to make the juice, especially if you've got a fruit, so...
You know, before we go, as long as we're talking, we had a call about plum pudding pie, and that was a nostalgic one. And you guys, I've got some recommendations from two critics for both fisherman pie and cottage pie, and I have never heard of either of these things.
Well, cottage pie that they have at Brady's Public House is really a shepherd's pie, and we all remember those from our youth with the ground beef and peas and carrots, and then they top it with mashed potatoes that they've done, you know, in a beautiful,
Piped in.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Charades.
Yes. And I would like to say that Brady's is better than what we remember in our childhood.
I would agree. I enjoyed recently the one at Conroy's. Again, in that category, a cottage pie. I think they use beef in theirs, whereas the traditional shepherd's is lamb, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. We've got just the tiniest bit of time, so I want to very quickly bring in Aaron from Kansas City with a recommendation. Hi, Aaron.
Yeah, hi.
Go fast, because we're running out of time.
Okay. Well, my favorite pie in Kansas City is Cheese Jamaican Cuisine Meat Pies.
Tell me about them.
So it's just a simple Jamaican street food, but it's ground meat and heavily seasoned in this flaky pastry, and they're fried and they're just delicious.
And thank you, Aaron. And Charles, for people who might be running short on time and just want to grab a pie for at home, you have a recommendation.
Oh, you mean Costco?
Yes.
Yes. They're the biggest pies. It's the best chicken pot pie in the city. For one reason, you just put it in the oven and it's done.
And their sweet pies are great, too.
Yes.
At this time
very
of year,
good.
Just grab
really
one
a good
pumpkin apple,
pie, yeah.
Whatever.
So there's consensus on the Costco pie recommendation.
Yes.
All right. Good to know. Our time is up. Charles Ferruzza, this has been fun.
Thank you.
Mary Block, Carlton Logan, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mary blogs about food at Around the Block. Carlton writes for kcfoodguys.com. He's also the co-administrator of the Facebook group Kansas City Eats. And you can read Charles Ferruzza's reviews in 435 Magazine. Our list of the best pies in Kansas City will be ready in time for the weekend at kcur.org. Listen back to any of the week's shows at kcur.org/Central Standard for a little weekend listening. You've got yesterday's conversation about free speech in the university setting, plus a personal story about how a KCK social worker changed a migrant farm family's life in the 1960s. This show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Todd Hope, and Suzanne Hogan, with help from intern Tom Taylor. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day, and our music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman.